Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Beat. 5 points clear, four goals scored, three great panellists, 2 days until the Bournemouth game and one round of Guest Laguna to come. Yes, Arsenal are soaring high at the top of the Premier League after a comfortable 4-0 win over Everton in their game in hand. I'm Mark Manbrines from PA Media and today I have a great panel of reporters who were also at the game on Wednesday night. I'm joined by Sam Dean of The Telegraph, The Daily Mail's Dan Matthews and Simon Collings from The Evening Standard. We'll look back on the Everton win, answer your questions and hear from Aaron Ramsdale in Access All Arsenal, cast an eye forward to the visit of Bournemouth and round things off with a triple threat of Guest Laguna. I want to talk first of all really about a man I know at least two people on this call have already written about today, and that's Alex Zinchenko. So, Simon, if I come to you first, just tell me, I'm going to give you the most open-ended question ever on this press conference. How good is Alex Zinchenko?
A lot better than I thought he was. And I quite regularly eat humble pie, but I've been having it a lot this season. I thought when they signed Zinchenko, they were just signing, you know, a solid Premier League player who would sort of compete with Tierney and, you know, would be this person we spoke about filling in for Tierney when, you know, he had his injury problems and maybe doing a job in midfield. But he's completely transformed the way the team play. And we have said it a lot this season, but I mentioned it today in the piece I wrote. I feel like in this title running, which we're now getting towards, where you need experience off the pitch and on it, he's going to be absolutely valuable. And teams have worked out with Arsenal, or think they've worked out, that if you sort of double up on the wingers, if you swamp Odegaard in midfield, you can get success, but they don't really countenance for Zinchenko essentially having a free role and cropping up on the right-hand side of the pitch, which he did last night for the opening goal. And yeah, I think for Arsenal, as we get into this business end of the season, this home stretch, he's going to be absolutely massive. And yeah, his performance last night was just on another level. And that opening goal, I'll leave the other two to wax lyrical, but it's getting to the point now where we probably just shouldn't call him a left back. I think we just need to think of some other name, and I know someone much cleverer and wittier than me will probably do it.
Also, one more geekier on that level, Sam Dean.
easy.
Is Alex Zinchenko starting to trouble Martin Odegaard as your favourite Arsenal footballer?
Yeah. He is actually. I've been saying that for a few weeks. I think since the World Cup and since Zinchenko's sort of got full fitness and been playing more regularly than he was in the first part of the season, I think he really has gone from strength to strength. And there was something that Mikel Arteta said last night, which I think was quite interesting and said quite a lot about Zinchenko's role in this team. He used the word unpredictable. And I don't think it's fair to describe any of Arsenal's forward players as predictable, but I think the way Arsenal play is quite choreographed and it's the same passing patterns again and again, which is very similar to City, and that's effectively the positional style of football that Arteta and Pep Guardiola like to do. But generally speaking, the opposition team is going to know where Saka's going to be and where Martinelli's going to be and where the striker might be. Obviously, the last few games Martinelli's been floating around more with Trossard and rotating, so that's helped too with the unpredictability. But I think it's someone like Zinchenko, perhaps even more than anyone else in the team, who has the capacity to pick up different positions, to float around and to pull teams apart in a way that they wouldn't necessarily be if Arsenal played with a more rigid left back, someone like Kieran Tierney, for example. So that quality that he offers, I mean, and a great example is that first goal last night, Saka's goal, where Zinchenko got the assist from sort of right central midfield. He'd come all the way across the pitch, dribble past a few players and open the game up with his movement and his skill and his vision. And that's something that very few players who play at left back, and as Simon says, he's not really a left back, but very few players who start in that role are capable of doing. And I think that's the sort of thing that against low blocks, which Arsenal often come up against, could make a really big difference over the next few months.
I don't think I'd be speaking out of turn if I was to suggest we might see an Arsenal beat Zinchenko special before the end of the season. Sam will definitely get you involved in that. Dan, I wanted to talk about Kieran Tierney's role in all of this. He came on last night. We haven't really seen much of him of late for obvious reasons. But his position's under threat in a way, isn't it? Because not only is he quite clearly the second choice left back, but he can't do anything that Zinchenko can do, really, can he? So if he comes into the team, the whole team almost has to change its approach, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's the kind of slightly tragic and sad thing when you see someone like Kieran Tierney come on last night. You know, he tries to take up similar positions to Zinchenko, and we've seen him do similar in the Europa League and slightly change his own game to try and be more akin to what Arteta might want from his left back. But the kind of remarkable thing about Tierney is I'm convinced still that he would improve almost every team in the Premier League if you put him as their left back. And I don't think there would be anyone at Arsenal, even Arteta, who would doubt that, you know, just his qualities as a defender and as, you know, a quote-unquote orthodox left-back, which when you're talking about Zinchenko almost sounds like an insult. But, you know, for most teams, it's not. He's actually, you know, it's easy to forget that not that long ago, he was one of Arsenal's most important players when fit, and certainly, you know, quality-wise, one of their most polished players. And it's a mark of quite how unique Zinchenko is and how important he has become to Arsenal that the difference or the contrast between him and Tierney is quite so jarring, because Tierney is by almost all metrics an exceptional left back and would be an asset to every team and is an asset to Arsenal. I think perhaps, I don't know, I can't speak for Arteta, but I think personally, the difference or the impact of Zinchenko has exceeded even more than what many people probably would have predicted, in terms of, we all thought he would be very useful. And Arteta said this even before he joined, you know, as Sam mentioned, the unpredictability, the versatility, those were all things that Arteta mentioned, the mentality that he's got from having won the Premier League at Arsenal. These were all things that we could foresee. And there was a sense, oh, you know, he could play in midfield, he could play left back, he could play that inverted left back role. And I think we could all see how that might work, but I think quite how significant that position and his role has become to Arsenal and how they play, especially in games like that, I think has probably exceeded almost everyone's expectations. And that only then makes the change to Tierney even more kind of significant. And again, I don't mean it in a bad way for Kieran Tierney, because I still think he's an absolutely brilliant player, but I just think the difference between him and Zinchenko now is so, so obvious. And that makes it very difficult to see where his future with Arsenal lies. But that being said, I imagine if Arsenal were to sell him this summer, you know, there would be a host of teams in the Premier League who would want him and who would, you know, be improved markedly by signing a player of his quality.
I wanted to move on to two players further up the pitch, technically further up the pitch than Zinchenko, although he gets everywhere, doesn't he? Bukayo Saka and Gabriel Martinelli. Simon, I'm just going to reel off some stats for you here and then let you speak. The only side now in the Premier League are two players in double figures for goals this season. No other player under 22 has scored more than 5 goals in the Premier League this season. Of Saka's 10 Premier League goals this season, all of them have either been goals to give Arsenal the lead or equalisers. These two young guys just are so crucial at the moment. When we talk about Jesus and Nketiah and false nines, it's actually those two wide players who are doing the business for Arsenal, isn't it?
Yeah, and that last Saka stat is quite a startling one, because I certainly think we'd all agree that he has taken on a bit of a sort of talismanic status this season, where when Arsenal have needed to, he's stepped up. And he did it again last night, because that opening goal was crucial, because it completely undermined what Everton's game plan was going to be. As soon as they were behind, they couldn't do what they'd come to the Emirates to try and do. And I thought he was fantastic in that role. And Martinelli as well. I think he had a bit of a dip for a few games, hadn't he? Looked like someone who was feeling the fatigue of playing a lot in the first half of the season, going to the World Cup, coming back. And we've seen over those past few games the value of having someone like Trossard to bring in, even just to take Martinelli out of the team for a little bit, because obviously he was dropped for that game at Villa, came on and scored, now got 3-3. Just having a bit more depth in that squad to try and rest these young players and just give them, even if it's a game out of the starting lineup, we're seeing the impact of. And Saka is the exception to that. He is the freak who just seems to play every single game. And yeah, you sort of have to wonder where Arsenal would be without a player of his quality. But seeing him at this age doing what he's doing is quite remarkable, really.
I think the thing that I found interesting about Martinelli is perhaps how Arsenal and him, or he has seemed to embody Arsenal a bit in the two halves of the season. The first half he was very much, embodying their kind of fearless front foot approach. He was possibly the most threatening winger in the Premier League before the World Cup. And then in recent weeks, obviously, as Simon mentioned, he had a dip and he was dropped for that Villa game. But in the past few weeks, I think he scored four goals since that Villa game. He scored four goals in three games. And yet, it doesn't actually feel like he's been playing that well. He certainly isn't carrying the threat like he was. And it kind of feels like that's a bit like Arsenal in the last few weeks. I know they clicked into the groove last night, but after they broke them down, but for 40 minutes, they weren't playing that well. Everton were doing a very good job of stifling them. And you know, it wasn't a vintage performance at Leicester. It certainly wasn't a vintage performance at Villa. But Arsenal are kind of showing a different side and keep producing the results, even though they're perhaps not hitting the levels they were. And that kind of feels like a bit like Martinelli, who certainly isn't playing with the same verve and threat that he was, but he's still scoring goals and still delivering for Arsenal.
Yeah, someone who comes on this pod regular with quite idiotic opinions, which is me. I said earlier in the season that he reminded me a lot of a young Cristiano Ronaldo when he first came into the team at Manchester United, where the end product was left a lot to be desired, but you could just see it was there. That raw talent is there. And again, I'm not trying to say he's the next Cristiano Ronaldo, but Martinelli definitely this season, I think we've seen him step up to another level. Sam, I wanted to talk to you about the manager. You speak to him and see him like we all do on a frequent basis at the moment. Some would argue too frequently, given we turn up at the press conference and Oliver's got any fresh ideas. Has he changed, do you think, in the way you see him, on the not only on the touchline, but in dealings with him? Do you think he's changing the way he talks, the way he's approaching this season now that Arsenal are very much title favourites?
Not so much in terms of his dealings with the media. I do think in the last few weeks, he's calmed down a little bit on the touchline. And that might just be a reflection of the games and what's happened in them. But if you remember fallout might be a slightly strong word for it, but if you remember the discussion around the Newcastle game and how agitated he was on the touchline for that, I think that I'm very confident that Arsenal and him were aware of that discussion. And probably he must have looked back at that and thought a bit, maybe I did overstretch the mark. And perhaps there's a fear that would have an impact on his team. Obviously, the counter-argument is that kind of behaviour helps whip up the crowd and could help the team be more intense. But I do get the impression that last few weeks, that's calmed down a little bit. Obviously, there was the sarcastic substitution gesture at Villa Park, which quickly went viral. In terms of press conferences, he's just been working so hard, despite our best efforts, to not play up any title charge this season. We've tried every single possible question to get him to talk about it. Because obviously, like, it's obvious that they're talking about the title race. The players, the coaches, the manager, they're not idiots. Although he can say to us and to the public that, yeah, we're going hour by hour, day by day, we know that's not going to be the case internally all the time. But he's just playing it very cool and very steady. And in terms, and this might be a bit too sort of navel gazing, and I apologize to any listeners, but in terms of like media coverage and the best quotes and the best reaction, I've always found Arteta to be the most quotable at more difficult times. He was very quotable and very demonstrative and very keen to get his point across when Arsenal really struggled in the first sort of year or so of his reign. And I remember when he said, look, here's my chest, hit me with the bullets and that sort of thing. And it was very sort of emotive and powerful language. Since they've got better and better, he's been much more reluctant to talk openly, and that's fine. And that suited him. And that's certainly not a problem, or nothing we can criticize him for. Obviously it'd be great for us if he came out and roared, yes, we're going to win the league and Saka's the best player in the world and Messi's rubbish, but that's not going to happen. And if we all worked for Arsenal and if we all were Mikel Arteta, we wouldn't say that either.
Just on the whole press conference and not saying as much, if I can dust off a cliche, I do think it is a case of he can let his team do the talking now and there's no real need for Arteta to come out and say anything because what Arsenal do on the pitch is grabbing the headlines. Whereas before, when the team was playing badly and, you know, they were getting criticised, getting abuse, I think he felt a need to try and shift the narrative and move it away from what was coming. And the only time we've really seen him do that recently is when he came out and had that sort of barb at Lee Mason. And I think that was pretty much time so that we weren't talking about the fact that Arsenal were playing Man City the next night. So I just think it's a case for Arteta now that he feels like he doesn't need to say anything because the team just performs like it does. And it's Guardiola's been quite similar at City where he's quite happy just to leave it and let the football do the talking.
Time now for Access All Arsenal, where we use the unique position of our panellists to take you further inside the Emirates than any other podcast can. Let's start, guys, by hearing from Aaron Ramsdale, who Dan, Simon and I spoke to in the mix zone immediately after the Everton win.
Not a lot of the players know the pressure of going for the Premier League title. You know the pressure of the relegation battle, so something like this must be easy for you, wasn't it?
I wouldn't say it's easy, but it's definitely a pressure which is so much nicer to have than the opposite side. It's an enjoyment. And because not a lot of us have been here before, we don't really know how to handle it. So we're just going in and playing the games as if we were 10th, 12th, whatever, you know. We're just going to go out there and play with our group of teammates and try and win as many games as possible. And when you play here at the stadium or even away, the fans, honestly, it's so much easier to play when things are going well and we're relishing it.
We also asked for your questions, and Simon, I'll come to you first here. A is for Arsenal asks, how much do you think the past couple of games would have changed Mikel's opinion on the best front three, and especially obviously with Jesus on his way back?
Yeah, I think it's shown that this system works best, certainly against teams who are playing, a deep defensive line and a low block with a sort of false nine fluid striker, which is what Jesus was doing for large parts of the season. Martinelli and Saka, for me, work best when the striker isn't staying as central as Nketiah likes to do. He is very much a penalty box striker. He wants to stay there. And that has its value and has its place. I think we saw that particularly in the Man United game and matches where it feels like it gets a bit more stretched, a bit more open. I think there is a time for using Nketiah in that, and particularly off the bench, I think as an impact striker, he's a real weapon for Arsenal. But this little run of games where Arsenal turned a corner and won three on the spin, we've seen, I think, that the team is probably at its best when they've got a number nine who helps facilitate the other players, a bit like Firmino did when Liverpool were in their pomp. So when Jesus comes back, I think we'll see him get that place back in the team pretty sharpest, which in fairness, a month or so ago, we thought it was going to be a fight with Nketiah and Jesus. But yeah, I kind of feel like that's moved very much in Jesus' direction now.
One for you, Sam. Courtney Dickinson wants to know, can Partey and Jorginho play in the same team? And if so, how?
This is a good question and one that I've been thinking about. And I can't really see how it works, to be honest, because I don't think... Well, firstly, I don't think Arteta's going to change the system. That is his system. It's what he wants to do. It's very similar to the one he experienced at Manchester City. And while there might be minor tweaks within games and changes of shape depending on the opposition, the fundamental formation will remain the same. And in that, I can't really see either Partey or Jorginho playing as number eight on the right or the left side of the holding midfield player. So it would require a shift to like a 4-2-3-1, I think, which isn't really how Arsenal work and would get in the way of Zinchenko, who effectively plays alongside Jorginho or Partey when Arsenal have the ball. You look at like average positions and touch maps, Zinchenko is effectively playing as a holding midfielder when they've got the ball. So I can't really see it. I don't think Jorginho could play in a sort of box-to-box role. He's got the legs for it. And Partey's so well attuned to that system and that role in the midfield that you can't really see him doing that either. And especially when you've got Odegaard, Vieira, Smith-Rowe back now, and Granit Xhaka all competing for those positions as it is. So I think it's pretty much going to be Jorginho or Partey for the rest of the season and the rest of both of their times at the club. But that what will be very interesting as part of that is if that changes in the second half of matches when one's on the bench. If, for example, Partey came on for Martin Odegaard, against Leicester and played in a more advanced role in the last 10 minutes there. So that kind of thing, there could be more flexibility in that sense. But no, I can't really see how that works.
Well, to be honest, we all thought Jorginho was signed as backup to Partey anyway, didn't we? I think it's more he's had a good run with Partey out injured, so people are trying to see if they can fit two into the same team. Finally, Dan, a question. Sam, I've interrupted you.
Sorry, no, I interrupted you. Just on that, obviously Jorginho, we learned afterwards, was feeling a bit ill, I think, last night, or struggling a bit with some sort of minor niggle. But I think the difference between his performance and Partey's performance in the second half, I think, will have reinforced the pecking order in the eyes and minds of all the Arsenal fans and probably all the Arsenal coaches too. That's not to say Jorginho's had Jorginho's been very good for Arsenal since joining from Chelsea, but I think Partey probably is a step above him in that position for now.
Lovely stuff. Finally, Dan, a question from loyal listener Steve F, who asks, do you think Arteta will and should make wholesale changes for the Sporting match? And at what stage should he start prioritising the Premier League?
Well, it's a question he gets asked a lot. Pre-Christmas or pre-January, his answer was always the same. We don't have the players to make wholesale changes. Now, obviously, they've added a couple more faces since in the January window, Trossard, Jorginho, Kivior. They've also got Smith Rowe back. But they've obviously then lost people like Jesus. So they probably have a few more bodies at their disposal. My instinct says he won't make wholesale changes. I think he will make changes. I'd expect Nketiah to start. I imagine Trossard will start again, probably move out to the wing. You imagine someone like Fabio Vieira will get minutes because he's been at pains in recent weeks to talk about how close he is to being at full tilt, I suppose, and being ready to challenge Granit Xhaka or Martin Odegaard in those eight roles. You'd imagine maybe Tomiyasu would start at right back, but even earlier in the season when Arsenal were, in the words of Arteta, quite short of players, he tended not to make too many changes. And part of the issue was the drop-off between the first 11 and the kind of fringe players was often quite dramatic. And even when he would play, for example, Rob Holding, this is not to single out these players for criticism, but, Rob Holding or Sambi Lokonga or even Fabio Vieira or Eddie, we'd often see Saka or we'd often see at least one of the first choice centre back starting. We'd often see Xhaka's play. We'd often see one of Saka or Martinelli play, and then others, Jesus, etc., would come on in the second half. So I can't imagine he will be making 11 changes, and I don't think he should, because at the moment Arsenal haven't actually been playing that many games recently. We've there were obviously fears earlier in the season that the schedule would catch up with them. It didn't then. And I think they're fairly well stocked now that there shouldn't be any huge fears that they're going to collapse, you know, because they've proven to be made of sterner stuff than that. I think they will want to, he'll want to stay in the Europa League as long as possible. I'm sure when it gets to April and May, and if they're still in the title race, still in the position they are now, I imagine the Premier League will become their priority and it probably remains their bread and butter. But he talks all the time about just the importance of winning and just keep winning. And we saw even last month, you know, they lost to City in the FA Cup. And then, you know, it didn't take much, even though that was a much changed side, for kind of a sense of, oh, here we go, to develop around, you know, unfairly or fairly among some supporters. And so I think he'll be wary about a defeat even in the Europa League. And therefore he won't want to put Arsenal in a position where, well, he'll just want to put Arsenal in a position where that momentum just keeps building and wins keep building. And then, you know, I think it's a nice dilemma to have whether in May or April he can decide to prioritise. But I think at this point he doesn't need to.
Thanks, guys. Remember, if you want our panel to answer your questions, look out for our tweets from at the Arsenal Beat in the hours before we record, and we could select them to be asked to the experts next time. Bournemouth next, and another great chance to get 3 points closer to the title, you could say. Simon, last night they stuck 4 past Everton. I think that now takes them 7 behind Man City in terms of goal difference. Arteta kind of palmed the question off, believe it or not, when he was asked about it the other day by Nick Ames. But it is something that they'll have to have half an eye on, really, isn't it? And is this another chance to perhaps put a dent in that?
Yeah, and Arteta, he actually spoke about this last season where Arsenal were going for 4th, and he was talking about the evolution of the team and what it takes to be at the top of the league. And he set the target of saying you need 90 or 100 Premier League goals in a team. Arsenal are currently on 56, which is more than they managed in the entirety of the first season with Arteta. And the way they've got there is very interesting compared to their title rivals to me. You look at United and City with Haaland and Rashford basically carrying the bulk of the weight going forward, whereas Arsenal have shared it around quite a lot. You mentioned that stat before about Saka and Martinelli being in double figures. You know, Odegaard needs one more and he'll be on 10 Premier League goals as well. Jesus is on 5 in 14. I think if he'd been fully fit, he probably would have been in double figures. So they've gone about it in a way where they've shared it. And I think it has eased the pressure on the team that if someone is missing, like Jesus was for a period of time, you don't feel like the wheels will necessarily fully come off. I'm sure City and United would argue that wouldn't be the case with Haaland and Rashford. But for the squad, I think personally, it must make a difference when you know if the goals are being shared around the team and for whatever reason someone isn't playing, someone else could step up to the plate. And, you know, they've had 13 different scorers and that's given Arteta basically rotated less than anyone else in the league. So it's really been a team effort. But as we've seen in seasons gone by, goal difference can be absolutely massive. So, yeah, this little run of games where they've got sort of relegation candidates, they need to make the most of it.
Simon touched on it a bit there in terms of relegation candidates and the level almost of the opposition in the next few games. I think we saw the first 20, 25 minutes last night, the crowd got a bit anxious, if you like, against Everton. Is there a worry that there's just now an expectation that Arsenal are going to turn up and tickle the bellies of anyone that turns up at the Emirates Stadium?
Yes, I think so. And I think that's been one of the more notable and significant like shifts in the past few weeks. I think the Brentford game at home was the first time this season I really felt a nervousness and an agitation among the home crowd. And that's partly because all the previous home games by and large had gone very well from very early on. So the atmosphere was a bit different. But in that Brentford game, I think I said this on the pod before, but you could hear the groans quite early on. And then the fans were almost catching themselves mid-groan and then turning it into a cheer and the encouragement, because they know how important that is and how that mood has changed at the Emirates. But it's almost like muscle memory when a pass is overplayed or mishit. They would just go, oh no, sorry. Go on, lads. You know, we believe in you. And I noticed in that Brentford game, before stoppage time, a lot of people started to leave, which again was a reflection of the game. Brentford had played very well. Score was 1-1. It didn't really look like Arsenal were going to get a winner. But yeah, I think the expectations have changed now, and that's how football works. I mean, from the start of the season onwards, Arsenal have been targeting top four. That is internally the club's target. Obviously, the fans, and now I'm sure the club as well, but the fans are now dreaming much bigger than that, and anything less than the title will be disappointing, and that is going to naturally bleed into the atmosphere. And yeah, even last night, I thought, first 25 minutes, half an hour before that opening goal from Saka, you could almost feel the nervousness again. And it's still a very good atmosphere. We've spoken about the Ashburton Army and the drum and the songs and all the various things that have changed at the Emirates. And it really is so much better than it was pre-COVID and certainly during the end of Unai Emery's time. But there is definitely an expectation now that wasn't there at the start of the season. And that brings a level of agitation that also wasn't there at the start of the season. So Arsenal need to harness that expectation and not let it burden them. And I do worry sometimes that when the crowd does groan a bit, it gets in the minds of the players.
Dan, I know this question could go either way, depending on what happens in the game, but they're playing after Man City on Saturday. Is that a plus or a negative, do you think?
I don't know, but I really feel like in the current... I know that's not particularly inside lads.
Okay, thanks, Dan.
I really feel like if you're going to be champions of the Premier League, you have to be able to deal with those situations either way they fall. So, you know, there was a period where they were playing first and City were following them every weekend, and inevitably it will flip and it will go this way and that. And I think the message from Arteta, which I think he was asked about this recently, and this kind of was his message, to use that dreadful football phrase, it is what it is. And ultimately, if, you know, there's no point in this point of the season worrying and wasting energy about, you know, oh, who plays first, who plays second, because it's a 38 game season. And if you're going to be good enough to win the league, you've got to be prepared to win when the chips are down and be able to set the pace. And so far, you know, Arsenal have done that. And so I think it would be a mistake for anyone to really think about that internally. And I'm sure, knowing what Arteta's like, but that's not the kind of thing that he will let people get concerned about. And I mean, clearly, if Man City drop points, it makes their life potentially slightly easier. If they win, it piles pressure on. That's just inevitable. But you'd like to think that if a team is serious about winning the title, that they won't let those things become a determining factor in their results.
Typically a reasonable and well-articulated point from Dan. But the most important thing is, obviously, it's good for City to play before Arsenal, so we as reporters know what the situation is when we file our match report. Because when City play after us, as in after we filed, and then after Arsenal, you don't know what you're doing. Like, are they 5 points clear or 4 points clear or three? You know, you don't have a clue. You have to like go back to it later and write it in the car park, as was the case at Villa Park. So really, for the sake of us four and the other Arsenal beat legends, they really need to start putting City ahead of Arsenal every single week.
Well, we're going to get that. If they go far in the Europa League, a lot of weekends you're going to have Arsenal playing on a Sunday, aren't you? So I'd imagine that might very well become the norm. We will end, as ever, with Guest Aguna. But I do want to quickly remind you that our latest special, Get With The Programme, will be available soon as Max Jones and some special guests take an in-depth look at the history, production and future of the Matchday programme. But now we're going to get back to business. I will read out a series of hints and clues about a former Arsenal player, and it's up to the panel to work out who I'm describing. Hopefully we will go for longer than 2 minutes after Simon burst Sam's bubble two clues in last time round. Each panellist will be offered the chance to guess after a clue is given as they aim to guess the Gooner. I have won the FA Cup twice. I say, let's just raise your hand if you'd like a guess, anyone. Simon Collings.
David Luiz.
Incorrect. I made 70 appearances for Arsenal. 7-0. Sam Dean got a hand up.
Is it Gervinho?
Incorrect. Wrong, I should say. Sorry, wrong. Mm. We've learned that incorrect and correct sound too similar. So you're dead wrong. Clue number three. My teammates have included Neil Mopai, Cristiano Ronaldo, and Mikel Arteta.
Oh, I just dropped my TV remote.
Got your TV remote, but the hand is in the air. Who are you saying, Sam Dean?
The batteries are falling out beneath the sofa, so that is an absolute disaster. I'm not sure whether Ronaldo connection comes in, but I'm going to go with Mathieu Debuchy.
Incorrect.
We had him a few weeks ago. That would be a scandal if it was him again.
At some point, we'll get a repeat. As long as it's not Stefan Lichtsteiner, we're laughing. Although there's enough clues left over. Clue number four. I made my Arsenal debut in a 2-1 League Cup defeat to Southampton in 2014. Sam's thinking about this whilst trying to rescue his batteries from under the sofa, so the other two have got a chance. No one's going for it though, so I'm going to move on. I was on the FIFA Ballon d'Or long list in 2015. Dan, what are we saying, Dan Matthews?
I was going to say Aaron Ramsey, but it's just too big. I think that's miles off.
Is it? Surely. I don't know how he would have played with them. Joel Campbell.
Incorrect. Both incorrect.
Have I had Joel Campbell before?
Yeah.
Joel Campbell was my first love before my own Nene, so it could have been repeated.
So hang on, he played with Ronaldo and Neil Mopai.
And Mikel Arteta.
And he was on the Ballon d'Or long... How long is the Ballon d'Or long list?
I didn't bother looking. Given that I know the answer, I would say it's fucking long.
I've got an idea. I think I've got a guess.
Go on then.
Oh no, did you say 70 appearances for... Wojciech Szczesny?
Incorrect. I have been capped 127 times by my country.
How many times did you say?
127.
2015 Ballon d'Or, was it?
Yeah. I played a key role the last time Arsenal beat Manchester City in a Premier League game.
I can hear Watts screaming as he's on the treadmill.
Hi, Charlie.
No, he didn't make his debut in 2014.
We've only got two more clues, but I think these are... The level suddenly drops, if you see what I mean. So, your penultimate clue. James Rodriguez was once my brother-in-law.
is it David Ospina?
It is David Ospina!
Oh, fantastic. When did he play with Ronaldo?
He plays for Al Nassr at the moment.
Oh, wow. He's still going. Ospina!
So, played with Neil Mopai, of course, in France, and Mikel Arteta at Arsenal. Won the FA Cup twice, 70 appearances, somehow made it onto the Ballon d'Or long list in 2015. 127 caps. He was in goal when Arsenal won 2-0 against Manchester City. James Rodriguez was married to his sister, but they have since divorced. And the final clue was I was named goalkeeper of the month in the Saudi Pro League in October 2022. But if you didn't know, he didn't play. Then maybe James Rodriguez was actually the...
I was just thinking of anyone Colombian.
Yeah, I wasn't. I was stuck thinking who came to the big reds, but just was couldn't think.
Can we do another one?
Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
I don't want to have to write my piece. I don't want to have to write my Martinelli piece. So if we can just drag this on for as long as possible.
Well, I can do, Dan, given that you're fairly new to the Arsenal Beat podcast and the Arsenal Beat in general. If you look back over our previous shows, we did a special around Christmas last year, which was just a collection of all of our previous guest Agunas. So you could waste a nice hour before you get back to write your piece by listening to that. Other than that, guys, thank you for joining us today. We'll be back on Monday to discuss what happened against Bournemouth and obviously look ahead to Lisbon away, where all four of us will be travelling. Until then, stay safe, everybody.